Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Super Carlin Brothers is sponsored by Nude. Y'all, of course, know about my podcasting and YouTube endeavors, and you may even know that I do some aquarium maintenance at times, but you may not be aware that my wife, Alice, and I also own a business together called Nude. I know it's a funny name, but there's actually a fun story behind it. See, Alice has always had a deep love for clothing and fashion, but even more so for thrifting. It was her way to sustainably and economically expand her wardrobe while still aiming for quality brands that would last. And she is really good at it. Like, I can't tell you the number of times over the years that she has been stopped by people admiring her finds. So much so that she coined a phrase for her response. Thanks, it's nude. As in new, but in the past tense, because it's not exactly new, it's nude. So, we took this concept and created a storefront not 100 yards from where Super Carlin Brothers was created and have an online shop featuring pre-loved clothing from brands like Lululemon, Free People, Anthropologie, Madewell, and so many more. If you'd like to check it out for yourself to ring in the nude year, if you will, you can do so at nudesalem.com and use promo code SUPER to get 20% off your entire order. That's NEWDSalem.com, promo code SUPER for 20% off.
Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands and dust off your broomsticks and join us as we unlock the riddles inside Goblet of Fire, Chapter 6, The Portkey.
I'm jazzed today, Jay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good one.
It's
all that really happens is, like, they walk up a hill, but, like, it's a fun chapter.
It's a fun chapter. I know we keep saying it here because we've been inside of this, like, kind of hilarious stretch of, you know, unimportant. Not unimportant. I mean, all chapters are important. Let's not be crazy here, but, like, you know, you're not exaggerating when you say that what happens in this chapter is they walk up Stoat's Head Hill.
That's pretty much it. Yeah. Like they kind of like wake up, get dressed, walk uphill, touch a boot. Yeah.
A manky old boot.
It depends on which particular sentence you read.
I can't even tell you, like on my chapter art, I have like in large caps letters, like manky old boot.
Yeah.
And then I got to the part in the chapter where they referred to it as like a moldy old boot.
A moldy old boot.
And I was like, my life is a lie.
I've been saying moldy looking old boot.
And I was like, no. It's a manky old boot.
Oh, my God. I mean, this is literally what I wrote. I said, so moldy, manky, mangy looking. Because, like, for the longest time, whenever I would listen to the book, I would always think he said a mangy old boot.
Oh.
Or like a mangy old boot.
A mangy old boot.
And yeah. I was like, but then you would always say manky old boot. And I'd be like, Ben, don't be ridiculous. That's a completely made up word. A Pokemon at best.
A manky old boot.
I've never heard someone use the word manky to describe anything.
Yeah.
But then I looked it up and manky just, and like, obviously that is what it says. And I was like, well, what does manky mean? I'm like old, just piece of garbage kind of thing.
Oh.
Yeah. And then I was like, but then like, I'm not crazy, right? Like mangy means that. And yeah, it means the exact same thing.
Yes, I know. I think that in the film, if I'm not mistaken, one of the twins is like, why y'all standing around that manky old boot? Mm. And it's like, it always like lives inside of my brain.
Ah.
And I'm just sort of like, even that though could be like one of those where like one of the Phelps twins could have just like said the wrong word, but they just like left it.
They just left
like,
it in.
It's like, what even is that word?
Yeah.
But either way, I always now regard it as a manky old boot. But this to me feels like the kind of situation, because I think this may have happened in a recent Jay versus Ben, and I don't know if I have the energy to go back and check the tape, but I think that in the chapter back to the Burrow where Arthur and the twins and Ron come to collect Harry,
yeah,
there was a situation, we were asked a question, how big did Dudley's tongue get from eating the Tun Tun toffee? And I think one of us said 4 feet, and then it's like, I think it's described as being like a foot long by the time like Harry gets into the fireplace.
Right, right. Yeah, Harry comes out and he's like, it was a foot long. And then Mr. Weasley comes through and he's like, it was 4 feet long.
By the time they finally let me get it smaller. And I'm like, I think this happens sometimes when we do trivia where it's like, how do they describe the port key on the top of Stoat's Head Hill? And it's like,
right.
Minky old boot. And it's like, no, no, no. It says right here that it's a moldy old boot. A moldy looking boot. And there it's like, wait, no, but it's both.
But it's both.
It's both.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, chapter art on this one, I think, is rather spectacular. In my mind, my own personal headcanon is that this boot belonged to Godric Gryffindor because it reminds me so much, for some reason, of the Sorting Hat.
Ah, it almost kind of has like a tear at the bottom, like it could be a mouth.
Doesn't it? Just like a little bit.
It does. Yeah. It does. You know what else about the chapter art is that I was wondering, as I was reading, it mentions like there was only the moon to light their way at one point, and I was like, oh, I wonder if that's a full moon. Is this like a werewolf night out here in the woods? That would be like kind of unsafe. But you can see, at least in the chapter art, that it is more of a crescent moon situation.
Yes.
Going on.
Sliver moon.
Sliver moon, yes, indeed. Yes. Yeah.
I do like the moon and the stars in the backdrop of what is otherwise a picture of an old, decrepit-looking boot.
Yeah.
Because it does add such whimsy to it.
It does, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like the chapter of the port key, or the chapter art for
chapter
it.
Chapter art.
Key. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, that just about covers everything I had about the chapter art.
All right, cool. Well, we'll just dive into, we'll dive into the chapter here, which, this whole chapter, it's like, it's just like, it feels like, did this need to be a chapter? Like, it's just them walking up a hill, but it is like, this chapter is extremely important in that it is establishing port keys as a thing, because the Triwizard Cup is going to be a port key, and it is very important that you, the audience, have a very good understanding of what this new wizarding term and device is. Not a perfect understanding, mind you.
Right. Yes, I agree with you. Yes.
Not a perfect understanding, but you need to accept that this is a commonly used thing that they've done all the time, and there's a perfectly good reason Harry wouldn't have encountered it yet, but he's just learning about it now. I'm calling Harry in this particular chapter Harry Exposition, because he is just feeding Mr. Weasley all of the lines.
All of the lines.
All of the lines, yes. Yeah.
So I think it's also very interesting, like, to dedicate an entire chapter to the port key, because as we keep talking about with chapter one, and the way that, like, you get, like, this huge piece of, like, Voldemort's plan through the lens of Harry's dream. And then we keep talking about how, like, it almost feels like it's written in such a way to, like, allow that dream to fade from your memory exactly as dreams so often do, like when you wake up and you can't quite hold on to like what you just witnessed.
Mm-hmm.
And then we spent the last five chapters, all this bulk of pages, doing basically nothing.
Yeah.
You know, but like this feels like writing the strategy a completely different way, where it's like, I'm going to prominently display the concept of a port key very early on in the series, make a big deal out of this kind of technology.
Yeah.
Because you don't want it to be, you want the port key to be prominently displayed enough so that when it happens later, you're not just like, that one thing for that one page. It's like, no. It's a whole chapter.
It's a whole thing. Yeah.
It's the name of it. So
name of the chapter.
Yeah. So lots of more setup that's going to happen and, you know, kind of continue to transpire throughout the rest of the book inside of this one. But the first page of this chapter is really just everybody groggily waking up rather early in the morning. We know the chapter will end with them arriving at the Quidditch World Cup at 7:05.
7:05.
Yeah.
Well, so, I'm good to see you doing some math too on this.
Yeah. So I'm trying to figure out like exact. Do you know how early it is?
I don't know how early it is for them. It doesn't seem like it's more. Mr. Weasley describes it as like a short walk. I can't imagine it's more than like a 30-minute walk or something.
Yeah.
For them, I mean, it basically sounds like they like walk down the hill into the town, through the town, up the hill. So I'm thinking like I don't know, 20 minutes, 20, 30 minutes at most.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe like an hour before time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Well,
the thing I like about this page, though, is really just that I've lived it on so many occasions.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Absolutely. I've lived this one so many times.
It reminds me, you and I historically have quite enjoyed going like skiing and snowboarding mm-hmm. on the mountains. And this sort of like being awoken very early and like willing yourself to like get out of bed because the thing that you're doing that day is something you actually want to do.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's like a slurry of like, I can even feel how badly they want to stay in their warm beds and in the comfort of their sleep.
Yeah.
And yet it's like, mm-mm. We gotta do it.
We gotta do it. We're going to Quidditch. It's like, it'll obviously be worth it later, even though we're kind of yawning right now.
Exactly.
Yes. So they get down. I love the whole scene. They just get downstairs. Mrs. Weasley stirring the contents of a large pot. She's like, what's in that pot? What's in that pot? I want to eat what's in there. It makes me hungry.
I think it's porridge.
It is porridge. I found that on the next page. And then I literally wrote, on this page, I wrote, makes me hungry. On the next page, I said, less hungry.
Less hungry now. Yeah. It's like, I was excited for whatever was in the pot. Like stew, carrots, beef.
What's it? What kind of breakfast is in a pot? Yeah. Porridge. Porridge. No, I should have seen that coming.
I love the phrasing.
Classic says, Gryffindors.
Yeah, I know, right? Mr. Weasley was sitting at the table checking a sheaf of large parchment tickets.
Yep.
There's something really satisfying about the sheaf of parchment tickets.
The word sheaf is just wonderful.
It really is.
Yes. And then I love this. It says, he looked up as the boys entered and spread his arms so they could see his clothes more clearly, which also, this is also how every dad is in this situation.
Yes.
The kids are like half asleep, stumble bumbling around the house, and dad is just like, good morning, everyone. Welcome to Quidditch World Cup Day. Look at me.
You know, the only thing more fun than doing fun things yourself, though, is doing fun things for your kids.
Oh, yeah.
And so I can understand, like, you know, this is like Christmas morning for Arthur. Like, he gets to wake up and he is giving his family and their friends, like, an experience that will last a lifetime.
Oh, not only that, Ben, he gets to dress like a muggle today.
He does.
He's wearing a golfing sweater, a very old pair of jeans, slightly too big for him, held up with a thick leather belt. So I just highlighted all that and it's like, so he's just basically dressed like any dad.
Yeah. Really? I mean, this is so often whenever anybody's taking a stab at muggle attire, they miss the mark.
Yeah.
And we're going to see that, I think, in the next chapter. Really, Arthur has kind of done it.
Oh, I know. Like, I was reading that, and then I think whenever Jim Dale reads it, it says, yeah, said Harry, smiling, very good. I feel like he always has, like, a little bit of sarcasm on him.
Agreed.
I know, and I'm like, I think actually he's being genuine. I think Harry is like, yeah, that's very good. You did it.
You
well
did
done.
It. Yeah, I know. It's like, Jim Dale, did you miss the tone of voice there a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, Arthur's a professional here, you know? He works with muggles all the time.
Yes. Also, I don't know what a very old pair of jeans would look like, because jeans, I feel like, are kind of noteworthy for being one of those garments that like almost get better with age.
Oh, absolutely. I feel like the jeans I'm wearing right now, I've had these for quite some time. These are like at least a 2018 pair of jeans.
Wow.
Pre-COVID.
Wow. Man, how about that?
I know.
Well broken in then,
that's
no
right.
doubt.
Yeah.
Good for you and your jeans.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you.
Arthur could maybe even wear them to the Quidditch World Cup.
Maybe he could.
Should you guys be the same size?
Yep. And then let's see. I feel like despite them all getting up early, they don't seem totally filled in on the plan either.
There is no situation where this morning happens without the last conversation last night being, don't forget, we're waking up very early.
I know. Like, this is definitely a situation where, like, all right, everyone up to bed because we got to get up early tomorrow and we cannot be late. We have to go on a quick walk down to Ottery St. Catchpole. We got to walk up Stokes Head Hill and look for a portkey, and we will not know what it looks like. So we need to have time to get there.
Yes.
Like, that conversation needs to have happened like probably like 10 times.
Yes.
And everyone's like, we get it.
Yeah.
But they do not seem to know at all what's going on. George is like, where's Bill and Charlie and Percy? Like, what are you talking? George is the one asking this?
I know. It's like, come on, George.
George, come on. And they're like, well, they're going to apparate so they can have a bit of a lie-in. Which to me, this is also like clearly the point of the chapter is to set up all of the, the portkey and stuff like that. But later on, we'll see like Dumbledore just do like sidelong apparition
yes.
with like Harry, which maybe this is like just helping reinforce how good of a wizard Dumbledore is. But it's like, would it not still just be faster for Mr. Weasley to just like sidelong everybody back and forth?
You know, that's the thing is that like I always try to think of like what a good metaphor, because they talk about apparition and like this time in this chapter, it'll be reinforced several times. Like, you have to pass a test. It's not easy to apparate. There's this pair that I'm talking about splinched themselves. Like, you don't mess around with apparition. Like, there are plenty of adult wizards who don't bother with it, prefer brooms, slower but safer. Like, you know, it keeps reinforcing this idea. And I think it's like you almost have to, because apparition is teleportation.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, that is a superpower just by itself. If you can teleport, that is extremely powerful.
I know, right? They're like, you know, if you watch X-Men, that's Nightcrawler's whole power, teleport.
Yes.
Yeah. And he's like awesome.
Right. And yeah. And so it's like you kind of have to like assume, and they don't do this a lot with magic in Harry Potter, which is actually something I would love to know more about in general, which is like the I would call it the mana cost associated with doing magic, but mm-hmm. like what does it physically take from you to do spells? Like, are you exhausted from it? Can you be like worn out? Does it like, you know, if you spent the whole day like casting, would you be like, you know, like fatigued?
Right. I mean, I would say the closest they ever come to this, because you're right, they don't talk about like, it just seems like as long as you can say the spells, it doesn't seem like it costs you like any energy or calories or some version of that.
Right.
You
right.
know.
Yes. There's no like conversion that's yeah. happening.
The closest they'll come is like talking about like Tonks's depression and her like loss of the ability to like metamorph.
Yeah.
And then like Merope's like losing her magical powers when Tom Riddle leaves her. Like, Dumbledore's like, that can't happen, you know, or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. That's true. Where it's almost like mental health could be
right.
impacting it.
Right. Yeah. It seems like mental health has a big bearing on your magical abilities.
Well, I mean, and it kind of makes sense with the mentors basically being the physical embodiments of depression.
Yeah, that's know? True.
Like, so
yeah.
it does feel like, yeah, big, big mental health sort of like back panel going on there. But with apparition, though, the big thing, I guess, is just like it does seem like you need to make it difficult enough to where not everyone would do it. And so like in my mind, it's kind of like one of those things where it's like walking to class as a college student, you know, it's like how early before class do you need to leave if you live off campus? And it's like, well, you could always sprint. It's like, yeah, but sprinting is very difficult, and so not everybody does it. Some people prefer to walk and take more time.
That's true.
You know, it's like,
why isn't everyone on the track team? Like, why isn't everyone always sprinting?
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Like, why aren't people running everywhere?
We could get everywhere, like, a lot faster, yeah, but it's like, nobody wants to sprint. So, like,
that's a good analogy, I think.
I don't know if it's like one for one, but it's like the closest thing I've been able to think of so far that kind of gives me like some bearing of like, okay, I can see why not everybody's doing this.
I can see it almost like lifting weights or something, or like when like you know you're like giving your kid like a piggyback ride or something.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, it's like I can walk there and I could do it and I could put you on my back and do it, but it's like for a little bit it's not very hard, but like after a while you get pretty heavy pretty quick there.
You do.
Yeah.
You do. Yeah. So anyway, it seems without having a whole lot of other information for it, it does seem like the apparition thing is a bit of a big deal, cuz I wrote the same thing down where it's like, why can't we apparate too? And it's just like sidelong apparition just must not be super common.
Yeah, it seems like it must be like difficult enough that like when Dumbledore when Dumbledore does it, you're like, oh, he can just like bring people.
He can bring people.
Yeah. But then Harry does it too.
Harry does do it too, which is another one of those where it's like, did Harry just do something like super impressive?
Yes.
Which I think the answer is yes, because and maybe that's like magic adrenaline that's happening. I know we're like all the way in Half Blood Prince right now discussing like one of the last chapters.
We are, but like at that point, Harry has never, well, I guess he's done it into like his hoop. In like the tests.
He's done it in the tests, and he had done it with Dumbledore to go and get Slughorn.
Right.
And then he would have done it to get to the cave.
But still side along.
Still side along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is his first time doing it in the wild, and he brings Dumbledore with him.
Yeah. Yeah, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
But then it seems like once they start camping, Hermione's always the one who does the side along with the other two.
I think they just all three do it.
Oh, they're all just doing it together. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think like when they leave the wedding, Hermione is the one who side-alongs them.
Okay.
But otherwise, I think they're just, well, maybe they, maybe someone is doing it because that, otherwise, how would they end up at the same place together?
Right. Yeah.
I don't know.
So, yeah. At the very least, whenever they go to that, that Tottenham Road, is that the first place they go after the wedding? You know that has to be Hermione. But even then, I think when they go camping, she says, like, my parents came here.
Yeah. I mean, they're doing, it feels like they end up doing it enough. Like when Ron returns, the Deluminator orb goes inside him and then he apparates.
True.
So it's not like they can't do it. I feel like by the time they get to Deathly Hallows, it's sort of just like, all right, everybody's skills are at 10 now.
Yes. Yeah.
We're good.
There's a little bit of anarchy also just sort of like undercutting that whole story because the entire government is failing and the Dark Lord is rising and it's kind of just like, do your thing, chosen ones. Anyway, so not the point. But the for this particular chapter, the point is that Bill and Charlie and Percy are going to be apparating to the Quidditch World Cup, which means they're just going to be coming later on.
Yes.
Yes.
That is the point. And then we get, we learn that you have to have like a license, take a test or whatever, that people got like splinched. I love how they say like the Department of Magical Transportation or whatever has to give out licenses. Like, can they tell anytime anybody apparates? Like, it doesn't seem like they can. But, like, I guess, like, how would they catch you if you didn't have a license, you know?
You know, even that, I think, is kind of interesting because I mean, Dobby is watching Harry through the hedges in Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah.
So he would have apparated onto premises.
Yep.
And but it's the hover charm he ends up getting caught for.
Yeah, he's watching him through the hedges, and then he pops in again because he cracks away there, too.
Okay, yeah.
So he would have come back into the room.
Right.
Done the hover charm and then apparated out. But none of that is registered.
Only the hover charm.
Well, I guess this is kind of like, even if you have like a driver's license, it's like, how they're going to pull you over? How's anyone going to know you don't have a license?
True.
Right? It's like, well, they'll know as soon as you mess up.
As soon as you mess up, which is exactly what happened here. Because these people have splinched themselves. Which we were just talking about how satisfying of a word sheaf is, a sheaf of parchment paper. Yeah. The word splinch is terrible.
Terrible word.
It is just upsetting.
It's exactly what it is.
Yes. Yeah. It's like then it must be finding the true name of splinching because it's like there couldn't be anything. It's like splicing. It has like a very similar sort of like uncomfiness about it.
It does. It's exactly what it sounds like. So I mean, my question about splinching though is that it seems like it would almost immediately like kill you. Like, if you left half, like, would you not just, like, so, my initial thought was, like, wouldn't, like, if you splinched and, like, left your legs behind or something, would you not then just be, like, bleeding out horribly at two separate locations across the globe?
Unable to rejoin yourself.
Unable to rejoin yourself. But I don't think that must be how it works. Like, okay. I don't think splinching is a bloody process.
Well, it is when Ron splinches himself in Deathly Hallows.
Well,
he's sort of grabbed by Yaxley. I think it's Yaxley.
You're right. It seems like he's missing like a section of his, like a chunk of his arm.
Yeah, he is.
Okay,
yeah.
So that would, even that would be like a little bit different because that would be like you missed like you'd scalped out a portion of it.
Yeah.
So like the part that reveals your blood would be gone. You know what I mean?
This is so uncomfortable.
I know. Okay, but like what I mean is I think... That means, like, where he is, his blood is exposed because that part is there.
Okay.
But, like, I think if you, like, left, like, your arm behind or something, like a body part, it feels like there's, like, a, like, some kind of, you're still connected through space.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, your arm is still fully there. It's not, like, cut in half. And, like, one part, like, it's just, like, the space between you isn't full. It's like lost in the apparition.
It's lost. Yeah. Okay.
Like, you know, like, because Harry, okay, so imagine like this. Like, when Harry apparates, he describes it as feeling like he's being squeezed through a rubber tube.
Right.
Right. So it's kind of like, to me, then what it is, if you splinch, is that like your arm is just on the other side of the tube, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, still in there.
So the arm isn't left behind.
I mean, it's left behind, but it's not like flopping around on the ground. It's not like been dismembered from your body. It's still attached to your arm. It's like your arm is floating wherever it is, still attached to your shoulder, but your shoulder is just not where your arm is.
So it wouldn't fall to the ground.
I don't think it would fall to the ground. I think it would be.
So when Ron gets splinched, there's like a piece of shoulder.
There's a piece of shoulder. And he's bleeding because it's gone down, like, to where his blood is.
But you I feel like if your arm is splinched off, then
it's not splinched off.
but isn't it? Like, I don't know if I'm understanding the difference between leaving an arm behind and leaving a piece of Ron's arm behind. Yeah.
I can see it. It's not perfect. I just don't think it's bloody because otherwise people would be dying immediately.
It does seem. No, yes, you're right. You're right about that. Unless there is like a very quick way to solve this and like the accidental magical reversal squad is able to like act extremely quickly on the occasion.
Yeah.
You know, like they can get there and like, you know, because then maybe like what they can do, it's like it's almost like a half completed spell and maybe they can like complete the spell and like bring the other piece.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Through this.
They can shove the rest of you through the tube.
Through the tube.
Back to where you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when it rejoins, all the blood goops back into you.
Yeah. But it's less like it's rejoined and more like it's just been like finally pulled through the hole is what I'm saying.
Right. Okay. So then is it so then when Hermione can't do this to Ron, is it because she's unaware of the necessary magic to retrieve the missing piece of himself?
I would say yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess that makes sense. I mean, it feels like it would require a rather specialty kind of training.
It does, yeah.
You know, within the wizarding world. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I think that's what we're gonna go.
Well, that's where to go with. Yeah. Harry's version of it is that he imagines a pair of legs and an eyeball laying abandoned on the pavement.
I hate his selection.
I know,
it would have been fine if just the pair of legs.
Yeah. But he added an eyeball.
Like, why the eyeball?
Why, Harry?
It's like what were you just trying to make it horrifying?
Yeah. Terrible.
Well, it worked.
Yeah.
It worked.
Yeah. Way to have just the worst version of it, Harry.
Yeah.
So then we get to find out, too, that even Ron's older brother, Charlie, who we've only ever known to be basically good at everything, failed his apparition test, which Fred is just so happy about.
Yes, I know. I know. Charlie had to take his test twice, said Fred, grinning. He failed the first time, apparated 5 miles south of where he meant to, right on top of some poor old deer doing her shopping. Remember? I think this is a funny piece of trivia.
Yes.
Because I do think there is a little bit of, if you were to ask which of the Weasley children failed their apparition test, it'd be like, who did? Because they're Bill and Charlie are always held in such a high regard that you can't imagine either of them not being good at something.
Right.
But what I thought was kind of interesting about this is that the very last line before it is just Arthur specifying, like, some people prefer brooms, it's slower but safer, and Charlie, compared to Bill and Percy, was the Quidditch player.
That's true.
So, like, he would have been an excellent flyer.
True.
But he also, where Percy and Bill were both head boy, he was Quidditch captain.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe the ability to do apparition is, like, a very book smart kind of skill. Mm. It's a very, like, technically inclined kind of skill.
I see.
You know, because I mean, then even Hermione passes and like Ron doesn't.
Right.
Although he barely misses it. It's like an eyebrow.
Half an eyebrow. Yeah.
Yeah. But that would also kind of track because Ron is at least somewhat of an athlete and Hermione is not usually regarded as being sporty.
Oh, in fact, even in this chapter, she will not be she will consistently not be athletic.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I know. That's why it's living in the back of my brain. I have a feeling we're thinking of the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, wow.
I know. Yeah. I was like, this is a strange piece of continuity that I didn't expect.
I know.
but let's see here. But what is kind of funny though, okay, I guess it says that Charlie had to take his test twice. Not that he failed twice, he had to take it twice.
Had to take it twice.
Because then Mrs. Weasley is like, yeah, well, he passed the second time, which I think shows a kind of like Mrs. Weasley that like, I wonder if she lets off the gas pedal, because she even does this with Fred and George. And we talked about it a lot in the last chapter, like the pressure that she does seem to put on her kids a little bit to succeed. Because it seems like Charlie has gone out. He's made it in the world. He's done great. Like, all is well. No concerns necessary. But surely Mrs. Weasley was like, well, Bill passed it on his first try.
I know, right,
like,
yeah.
Like when Charlie didn't. Like,
oh, you're right. I bet she was like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. I think maybe that's like, you know, Mrs. Weasley is like, she's got like a, maybe not like a finish line in mind, but like there's something that will eventually prove to her that each of her children have like left the nest and then she will respect them and do nothing but dote on them.
Right.
But until they achieve such a standard.
Yeah.
They're being pushed.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, she's going to be coming down hard on Fred and George here again in just a page or two here.
Right.
Yep.
This time of year, a good hoodie is absolutely essential, but it's tough to find one that will last through the season. That's why the American Giant Classic Full Zip Hoodie is made to last a lifetime, so you can count on it to bring you comfort and warmth year after year. Slate Magazine called it the greatest hoodie ever made, and from cotton to zipper, it's made right here in the USA. With timeless style, heavyweight fleece, a double-lined hood, and reinforced elbow patches, you can depend on it for years to come. Snag the hoodie that will bring you comfort for life, the American Giant Classic Full Zip, and save 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com when you use code CLASSIC24 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code CLASSIC24.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Yeah, and then Mr. Weasley says, Ginny, this is so funny to me. Ginny asks, why do we have to be up so early? Just like, did she go to bed like with no understanding of the plan the next morning? Just go to bed, just like shaking her awake. Time to get up. You're like, wait, why? Now? Why?
I'm very confused.
And she's like, well, we've got a bit of a hike. Can you imagine if like they did not tell you the night before and you just were like awoken at whatever, 5, 6 in the morning, and it's like, hey, get up. We're going for a 30-minute walk up what it sounds like an extremely steep hill.
It does sound like a very steep hill, although it does vaguely remind me, where we live in the world is in Roanoke, Virginia, which is on the Appalachian Trail, which runs up and down the East Coast. And I do vaguely remember, I think it was like New Year's Day one year when we were like in high school, and I feel like mom and dad woke us up, and they were like, we're hiking Dragon's Tooth today, which is a really prominent like hiking spot around these parts. And I feel like I vaguely remember that being like, what?
Today?
Today? We're getting up to go hiking?
Right now?
Okay, then. I mean, we did it. And it was beautiful.
Yeah,
worth
it. Love Dragon's Tooth.
Yeah.
Very worth it if you're in the area. Even Harry's like, walk? What are we, walking to the World Cup? So it sounds to me like the Weasleys did a terrible job informing people of the plan.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of excitement with Harry arriving and all.
Yeah, I guess so. But still.
Yeah, but still. And Mr. Weasley does clarify that that is miles away, which makes me think that whatever Stoat's Head Hill is not miles away.
Yeah, no. I mean, he says it's just, we just need to walk a short way.
Yes.
Yeah. But then Mrs. Weasley quickly notices that George is hiding something in his pocket. And he's like, what? In an innocent tone that deceived nobody.
Love that phrasing.
I know, love that phrasing. And then this is also, this entire situation, it's serving two purposes where Mrs. Weasley is going to scold them for trying to bring all the Tung Toffees they have brought to the World Cup, which is setting up a situation later on wherein she's going to feel very upset that the last thing she might have said to them was that they didn't get enough OWLs.
Yes. Yeah.
And then also it's introducing us to the summoning charm, which, how do you say it?
I say Osseo.
I say Osseo too.
I mean, Osseo, Akio,
Accio.
I don't know if that's one that people do. Sometimes double C can kind of give you a chuh sound.
Yeah.
Yeah, I say osteo, so hopefully that doesn't drive people crazy.
But yeah. I know, because we're going to say it a bunch.
I know, yeah. So that's good setup for later, though, because that's obviously the summoning spell is a pretty prominent one. Kind of surprising we actually haven't seen it before now.
It's kind of surprising it's not like a year one spell. Just like summon things to you feels very like, whoop.
Well, and it's funny, too, because the way like when Harry will eventually learn it, it seems super complicated, like as if like he has to practice like a lot to learn how to do this. But then it does also seem like at some point, like maybe like once you've got like harnessed, it's just like a pretty everyday spell. Cause I think it might be the first spell he does when he's 17. He's like, that's right, I'm 17.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, so glasses.
Yeah. And the glasses that poke him in the eye.
Yes.
He's like, nice one.
So cool.
Oh, man. And then, so she starts summoning out all the Tongue Toffees from all of their robes. I don't know what she's aiming at or what she's like thinking. There must be some amount of like nonverbalness because she's not saying like Osseo Toffees or something.
Right. Yes. You know? It also seems like it kind of reminds me of picking up like rice with chopsticks. Like you kind of have to do like one at a time or something. Yeah. Like,
but then like at like, in like Snape's worst memory, Flitwick will just be like, he'll summon all the test results to himself from like the OWLs.
That's a good point.
It's like 100 parchments come flying at him or whatever.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Which is a funny scene to imagine.
It
as
is.
Well.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a matter of skill.
I suppose it could be.
Yeah.
Or yeah. Yeah. Maybe they're all different kinds of candy. So if you just said summon like Osseo Toffee, like it would only get some of them.
That's true. That's true. Yep. But I do love the fact that they've sort of hidden them in all of the folds of their clothing. It's almost like they like expected this to be a problem. So it says that the Toffee zoomed from all sorts of unlikely places, including the lining of George's jacket and the turnips in Fred's jeans.
Yep.
We then learned that they spent 6 months developing the Tongue Toffees.
I know. And she says, we told you to destroy them. And I'm like, can you imagine if, like, imagine your daughter has been up in her room making something for 6 months and you're like, destroy that?
Yeah, it'd be like, I know.
What would it be? I'm like, all I could think is if, like, if you, like, walked in and they were like, I don't like, if my kids were like growing mushrooms or something in their room or something, you know, I'd have to be like, okay, that's maybe not great.
You know? Sure. Well, yeah. I mean, you mean like mushrooms or like mushrooms?
I mean like hallucinogenics.
Okay.
Yeah. You know.
Got it. Okay. Shrooms.
Yeah. Shrooms.
Yeah. 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 That's a fair point.
They were just growing.
Yeah. It's like I've been working really hard on these, Dad. It's
I know. Like,
I don't care.
Yeah. That's what she's acting. She's acting like it's like hard drugs they've made.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Well, it's okay because eventually they will cross the Molly Weasley threshold of success.
They will.
And she will be quite proud of them.
I know, but at the moment, she is not. I'm trying to imagine if Luke was up in his room and he'd been like building something for 6 months, almost no matter what it was, it'd be hard to be like, destroy that.
Destroy it. Yeah.
Destroy it.
I mean, that's the thing. I guess you have to keep in mind, like, if it was meant to be like a prank, like if it was going to be like a mean prank that they were going to play on somebody, like out of malice,
yeah,
then definitely I'd be like, no, you can't do that. I don't know if I would destroy it, but I'd be like, you're not gonna go pick on somebody. Like,
well, no, yeah, sure.
That's not okay. But like their whole thing is that, like, you know, this is supposed to, like, people are buying them knowing what they will do. Like,
I know.
They're meant to be fun.
Right.
So.
And like she knows that as well. So I don't know. Plus harsh.
Harsh.
Yeah, harsh.
A little bit harsh.
Indeed.
Let's see here.
And then she even throws at him and says, no wonder you didn't get more OWLs, which is just like, ouch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would sting a little bit.
That would sting, especially because what they did is still pretty impressive.
I know. So. I know. But yeah, this feels like a rather classic circa 15, 16 year old situation where the twins basically, out of their frustration, hoist their rucksacks onto their backs and walk out without another word to her.
Yeah.
What a kind of like sad way to kick off what is supposed to be a very fun occasion.
Yeah, it definitely is sort of the mood. It's not super positive. Also, I also can't ever believe this, that she's like waving goodbye, you know, behave yourselves. Like, literally everyone in the family is going to the Quidditch World Cup except Molly.
I know.
Like,
yeah.
Why isn't she going?
Yeah, right.
Like, I'm sorry. Like, I mean, nothing, you know, they're very generous people. But like, if I'm Molly, like maybe Hermione didn't get an invite. You know,
it is always hilarious that Ron got his two best friends to come,
and Molly's not going.
And nobody else got a friend. And
yeah.
Yeah, and Molly's not going.
And Molly's like, oh, yeah, right.
But I mean, it wouldn't be like you need Hermione to be there. Like that's the, I guarantee that had to be like a problem where it's like on some level, we're just going to have to accept that Hermione's going to make choices or people are going to make choices so that Hermione, we talk about it before, like she barely spends time like at her house.
Yeah.
It's like, it's kind of because she's a main character.
Oh, I know. I'm presently listening to Half-Blood Prince right now. And Harry has Christmas at the Burrow, and Hermione successfully spends Christmas with her parents. And it's just sort of like, well, this is strange.
Yeah, how odd.
Why didn't Hermione have a reason to be at the Burrow?
Well, probably because Ginny and Harry are starting to kick things off.
He's definitely aware of it at that point.
Yeah.
He's definitely like, what do I do about this?
Is that when he's got like the growling monster inside of him?
Yes, yeah. He's just sort of got the monster that's like, Dean Thomas.
Point in time, that monster will purr. That will be the word used to describe it.
Yeah.
Makes me uncomfortable.
So uncomfortable. It's
like, I don't want to think about it.
I was at the park today where he's very nearly about to happen for him, and it is funny where he's just like trying to think of all the ways he could explain it to Ron. We're like how could he explain it to Ron in such that it would be like cool. Ron, but like hear me out, like what if I was like dating your sister, you know?
She has nice skin.
She's got really great skin. Here's how I think I would. I was like, Harry, here's your pitch, man. Like, dude, Ron, think about it, we could be brothers.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
My best friend married my sister-in-law.
Exactly.
So
there you go.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Come on, Harry.
Come on. Anyway, so as we continue, let's see here. Mrs. Weasley says you have a lovely time and to behave themselves, and that she'll send Bill, Charlie, and Percy along around midday, which does sound kind of nice for them. Not so bad. Meanwhile, everybody else sets off across the yard. It was chilly and the moon was still out. How cold is it in this part of the world? In summer in the middle of the night.
Can't be that cold.
I think Harry will say that he can't like feel his feet here in a few minutes. And yeah. I'm like, man, how cold is it?
Or is that like because of the like muscle failure from walking up the hill?
Maybe that's it. We'll find out when we get there.
Okay, we will. And now we turn into Harry Exposition. And he says, so how does everyone get there without all the muggles noticing, he asked. And Mr. Weasley is just there to tell us, the audience, all of the information. It's been a massive organizational problem. The trouble is about 100,000 wizards turn up at the World Cup, which is just interesting to get like global numbers on the number of wizards out there.
Yep. Excuse me. That's very true. 100,000 is, it's kind of an interesting number as well. I mean, it's a big number for a sporting event.
It is. That's like a huge stadium.
Yeah, it's a very big stadium because like the where we would go in Blacksburg to watch the Virginia Tech Hokies play, I think seats just shy of 70,000 people.
Yep.
And it is known for being one of like the loudest stadiums to play at, like in the country, you know, professional sports, collegiate sports,
yeah,
or otherwise.
Yeah.
So to imagine 30,000 more people, it's like, yeah, ooh, that would be wild.
That would be, pretty crazy.
So big turnout.
Big turnout. I also love how Mr. Weasley goes on to said, we had to find a nice deserted moor to set up as many anti-muggle precautions as possible. The whole ministry has been working on it for months, which I highlighted and just said, except for Percy,
who
works in the department responsible for it.
Right, he's been pawned off on cauldron bottles.
Exactly, yeah. Literally everyone from every office is here working on it, but you go work on that report, Weatherby.
Yes, yeah. Yep. I mean, it actually does sound a little bit as though like the ministry is like, there's no reason not to hire him. His resume is great. Like he deserves to be hired, but like,
right.
But like, we don't really want him to be like interfering with like the important things that we have going on.
Yeah, they're like, okay. They're like looking at his resume and it's just like, wow, just like 12 O's in your OWLs, great NEWTs, yep, time turner experience, cool,
yep,
cool. And they're like head looking boy. Up at, yeah, head boy, prefect, and they're like looking up at him and he's like talking and they're like, ugh. I mean, on paper, you seem great, pal.
Yeah,
Barty, you got something for him to do?
Barty's like 3% and of cauldron bottom problems.
Exactly. Then he gets just shunted over there.
Yeah.
Let's see. Okay, so I found this like a randomly very interesting and somewhat telling sentence, though, where Mr. Weasley is describing the arrival process, and he says, people with cheaper tickets have to arrive 2 weeks beforehand, which makes it sound like a real, like that's like the penalty. Like you don't have good seats, so you have to get here earlier as kind of like the...
Right.
It's like the compromise. Like
much less convenient.
Much less convenient. However, not exactly how real sports work, is it?
I guess not. No. Like, do you mean like where like the real diehard fans would be the ones who would be out earliest, having fun as soon as possible?
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, I mean, we just talked about like Virginia Tech games. Like, you know, we try and get there when we had like season tickets for a while. We would try and wake up early and indeed get there to be able to tailgate for like 3 to 4 hours.
Yeah.
But there are people who get there the night before and sleep in their camper and start the night before.
Yeah, so that they can like really get the full
experience. They can really get it going. Like they're making a whole weekend out of it.
Yeah.
Like also, like I don't even think this totally like logically tracks. People with cheaper tickets have to arrive 2 weeks beforehand because one, more diehard people want to be there longer. But this is a system that would punish those people as well, because if you can't afford the higher tickets, then you probably need to be at work more often.
Also true,
right?
And so taking like a 2 week holiday where you need to be doing festivity related things whilst living in your campground,
your tent,
it does seem like it would be rather expensive. So
yes,
it doesn't totally make sense, but it also then I think sharply brings into focus just how expensive Arthur's tickets must have been, because like they had to arrive 2 full weeks early, and like, you know, then you're assuming that those tickets are like not very good or whatever. Arthur's in the top box and they are arriving day of
hours before. So obviously we know that's about as good as it can get as far as arrival times based on this one sentence. We will also learn it also then speaks to what quality of tickets the Diggories must have.
True, which
means they're probably doing pretty good.
Seems like it.
Even though we're gonna find out that Amos works for the Department of the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures. More on that in a minute. Then we're also gonna find out that the Lovegoods have already been there for about a week, so they're obviously gonna have much worse tickets.
Yes. But fun nonetheless that the Lovegoods go.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like okay, that's cool. That's cool.
Well, Luna obviously does like Quidditch. I mean, she signs up to be a commentator eventually.
She does.
And she like makes fancy headdresses and stuff. You know.
Right. Yeah. She's into the fanfare.
Yeah. She likes it.
Love the early reference to Luna there, knowing that they're going to be there.
Yeah.
And then we learned that the Fawcetts couldn't get tickets. And this was kind of interesting because I was like, why does Fawcett sound so familiar? And one of the reasons is because like Snape will like give this character, Miss Fawcett, like 10 points from Ravenclaw later on at the Yule Ball when they're like off snogging in the bushes or something
sure,
like that.
Yeah.
And then Fawcett also, I believe, is somebody that Lockhart zeroes in on in Chamber of Secrets during the Dueling Club.
Oh.
Which is kind of a fun one because it's like, oh, Fawcett. Like, the name selection's kind of interesting because that's like where the snake is engraved for the Chamber of Secrets.
Oh, it's on a faucet.
It's on a faucet.
Yeah.
But then I was digging into the name even further, and basically what I found is that the character is named for a professor whose name is Tonks Fawcett.
Really?
Like, real world professor of nursing education, I believe.
What?
His name is Tonks Fawcett. So
wow.
Must be important because not only is the last name being used here, but obviously Tonks is going to be a very important character going forward as well. So that's just kind of like, how about that?
That is wild.
Yeah, I was like, that's a piece. I didn't know that. So I was like, who knew that digging into this one random name would actually yield results?
No, I know. What is that professor? Yeah, I wonder what they're specifically famous for or something.
No idea.
All right.
Yeah. Well. Other than in the field of nursing, that's the only thing I saw. So.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds good. All right. Well, let's see. Then we get a little bit more information about port keys that says, or Arthur says, they're objects that are used to transport wizards from one spot to another at a prearranged time. However, that's not quite true.
Not always
true. It is not that they are always going to use the one they're going to use today is a prearranged time that at a specific time, if you are touching the boot, it will transport anyone touching the boot to the desired location.
Right.
However, when you fast forward into the maze, that is not a predetermined time, or else that would have had to have been the most coincidental touching of the port key ever.
Yes.
Instead, that one is going to be just activated by touch. The moment you touch it, it goes.
Yes.
So yep. That is, but this is like one of those things that's like, it's introducing you. You don't know anything about port keys. So everything you're hearing from Mr. Weasley, you just take as like, well, that's just how it works.
Right.
Right. So it is like, it is how it will work right here, but it's not the only way it can work. You just don't know that yet.
You just don't know that yet. Yeah. So it is very interesting. And the of course, the other very famously interesting thing about the port key cup is that it also returns.
It returns.
Which is always sort of like, it's like, okay, so there were some special stipulations going on with that one. And like, why would it return?
Why does it work twice?
Yeah.
Why did they need to get back? Because Voldemort was going to pose as Harry.
Yeah.
Polyjuice potion.
Yep.
Potion.
There it is. Once again, there you go. It's always Polyjuice.
It's always Polyjuice. I mean, especially that year.
That year, especially,
as it were.
Yeah. There we go.
Sorry, we're in that book.
We're in that book.
Let's see.
The port keys are great though because you can do large groups at a time. We learned there are 200 that have been placed at strategic points around Britain, which I was just trying to do like quick math here, but I guess we have what? We have Harry, Ron, Hermione, Fred, George,
Ginny,
Hermione, Arthur. Is that 8?
I think you said Hermione already.
Okay, 7?
Yeah.
And then Cedric and Amos. Yeah, will show 9. Up. So 9.
Yeah.
So maybe 1,800 people, 2,000 people traveling via Port Key.
Okay.
Out of the
100,000.
Which feels reasonable. Cause
it does.
You figure people are coming from all over the world.
Yeah, plus you wouldn't imagine that like more than like 9 or 10 people could even be touching one successfully.
Well, and yeah, so it's like, obviously, I mean, I'm extrapolating. I'm doing the same thing we do with like students at Hogwarts where it's like there are 5 boys and 5 girls in Gryffindor. So we're just going to assume that there are those in each of the houses.
Yeah.
And it's up working out that way.
We know for a fact that Harry's year is 40 people.
Yes. Yeah. So. But so anyway, I just thought that was kind of interesting just to try to zero in on approximately how many people are traveling via port key.
Yeah, that makes sense. Makes sense. Mr. Weasley also says that port keys are unobtrusive things, obviously. So, you know, he says some muggles don't go picking them up and playing with them. However, again, this is a bit of a misdirect. Like the one they will be using is unobtrusive, but obviously it doesn't have to be that way.
Yes.
Like, obviously, because, again, the Triwizard Cup will be a very prominent thing.
Yes.
Again, but you're not going to think, because it's such a prominent thing and because of this sentence, you will not suspect it at all.
Yeah, it's a very good way to sort of, like, throw you off of that particular scent. Yeah. Unless, of course, you subscribe to my brand new idea that this particular boot once belonged to Godric Gryffindor, in which case, probably a pretty important boot.
Probably, yeah. If only they all knew.
If only they knew.
But they don't.
They just discarded this junk. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
I'm also kidding, by the way. I don't think it's actually Gryffindor.
Yeah.
But it is funny to think about.
Yeah.
Okay. So then let's see here. Once they do arrive, there's sort of this like funny scene as they're making their way up the hill itself, which again sounds like it must be pretty intense because it says, each breath Harry took was sharp in his chest and his legs were starting to seize up when at last his feet found level ground.
Yep.
Phew, panted Mr. Weasley, taking off his glasses and wiping them on his sweater. We've made good time. We've got 10 minutes. Hermione came over the crest of the hill last, clutching a stitch in her side.
I was like, wait a minute, what?
I know. It's like
did we have to include that information?
Yes, that is the question. It's like, was anybody like, wait, but where's Hermione?
Like, just in case you were wondering, Hermione was the worst hiker.
Yes. But we talked about this. We laughed about it in Prisoner of Azkaban because I think there's a scene where like they're running across the grounds in front of Hogwarts, the Forbidden Forest, and it's like 30 seconds later, Hermione showed up. It's like, 30 seconds.
Why is it so long? How'd she get so far behind?
It's like, or how fast is Harry?
He's a speedster, man.
Yeah.
He's moving. I think you were right, though, Ben. We missed the sentence that said, as they got to the hill, it said, Harry's hands and feet were freezing. Mr. Weasley kept checking his watch. So it is quite cold.
It is quite cold.
Even walking up a hill, which you think would warm you up.
You would certainly think so.
Yeah. But in case you were wondering, Hermione, consistently unathletic.
Just apparently.
Slow runner, bad hiker. can't, you know, she's got a stitch. I mean, come on, girl. Just
breathe in through your nose, out through your mouth. That's what they always told us in cross country to try to get rid of stitches.
I know. I'm like, I never think of Hermione as being like, I never think of her as being like athletic, but I never think of her as being like specifically unathletic.
Yes, you know? Yes, exactly. It's like, I never would have thought of Hermione as not fit.
Not fit, right, yeah, right. Yeah. But like, two books in a row now.
How about that? The bigger thing is that there's no reason for that line to be there.
There's just not. You could just not include it, and it's totally fine.
Right, yeah. So we could have just said, well, we've made good time. We've got 10 minutes. Now we just need to find the portkey, said Mr. Weasley.
Yep.
Instead, what it says, well, we've made good time. We've got 10 minutes. Hermione came over the crest of the hill last, clutching a stitch in her side. Now we just need to find the portkey. Like, do you see what I mean? Like, it is non-essential information.
I know. It'd be like if you were like introducing someone, it'd be like, oh, hi. Well, this is my friend Ben. He's got a zit on his forehead right here. Ben, this is, Alice. And he'd be like, well, did you have to say that?
She can see it.
She can say it. Come on. I'm gonna point it out.
Darn.
It's such an unnecessary sentence.
It's just funny.
Anyway,
poor Hermione. They're looking for the portkey. I do think it's kind of funny that they don't know what it is.
I know they don't know what it is. He's like, it won't be big. Come on. Can you imagine if they found like some, if there just happened to be another piece of litter around?
Yeah, they're like holding like a tin can. And
this is it. Oh, man.
We missed it.
Butts.
Anyway, then silhouetted in the against the dark starry sky is two tall figures. Mr. Weasley announces Amos, and he heads over to shake hands with Amos Diggory,
a ruddy-faced wizard, not unlike Hagrid.
Yes, indeed. Which I have since discovered. Ruddy to me sounded like a negative term, but I think ruddy just means red.
Like red. Yeah.
Yeah. So probably from walking up that hill.
Yeah. Yeah. With a scrubby brown beard. I guess in the movie he does not have the beard, does he?
No, he really doesn't.
No.
No. Yeah.
Holding a moldy looking old boot.
I know. That was the line. Like literally I wrote, not Mankey. Has my life been a lie? Like I was like, what? How did I get this wrong? I knew it was.
This boot has one unique feature. It's Mankey.
It's Mankey.
Yeah.
Not quite a primate. Primate.
Yeah, exactly. Primate.
Hey.
Very good. Very good.
I made a Pokemon reference.
You did. Did you know that Primeape now evolves into something as well?
Oh.
I know.
Who's got the time?
Who's got the time? It's very cool. It's called Annihilate.
Okay. That is pretty cool. That's actually awesome.
I know.
All right. Well, anyway, that's not the fandom we're discussing today.
That is not. Instead, we're going to learn Mr. Weasley is going to introduce Amos to everyone. He says, he worked for the Department of Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures, which I highlighted and interpreted to mean that Amos voted to have Buckbeak killed.
Oh.
Right?
You're right. Well, or at the very least was threatened by Lucius to vote in such a manner.
Caved.
Caved under pressure.
No backbone, Amos.
I know. He's going to talk some serious smack here in just a second.
He is going to talk some smack.
Yeah. If only Harry had put those pieces together quicklier. Wow, that quicklier. Was a terrible way to say that.
I know.
Faster. It would have been so funny if, like, Amos is, like, digging on him for the Quidditch stuff, and Harry's like, yeah, well, at least I didn't vote for Buckbeak to be...
Yeah.
Mad at.
I know. That would have happened, like, in real time here, like, what, like, 3 weeks ago, you know?
Well, has it been that long?
Like, 6 weeks ago.
6 weeks ago.
Pretty recently.
Very recently.
Notable.
And it was a rather big deal.
Rather big deal. Year-long trial, as it were.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're right, though. You're absolutely right.
I know. It would have been great if Harry had a quip ready for him. Just like, oh, yeah, I heard you totally whiffed on that Buckbeak trial.
Right. Whatever happened to the hippogriff?
What happened to that hippogriff?
So just dangerous hippogriffs running around because your man couldn't get there in time?
Because your man couldn't get there in time? Yeah.
And Harry like gives Hermione like a behind-the-back high five.
Yeah, right. She's like, just in a second.
Hold on. Okay. Does anybody have any water?
Anybody have any water?
Poor Hermione.
Poor Hermione, indeed.
I know. Okay. But the other thing I think is kind of interesting about the regulation and control of magical creatures is that it will also apply to house elves, which are going to be a really prominent topic for the rest of this book.
Yes.
Which does kind of make you wonder if, like, we're supposed to... I mean, because Amos is... He's also about to be kind of mean to Harry. It's like, are we supposed to be positioned, like, at an angle from him a little bit? Like, Cedric never really comes across to me as, like, opposition.
Yeah.
Like he is the other Hogwarts champion, but like he is the more rightful Hogwarts champion.
Oh, absolutely he is. I mean, it's like, it's funny how like arrogant Amos is going to keep acting when Cedric is like so very humble.
I know, you know? I know. Yeah, like that's almost like where you like wonder if Cedric just grew up watching his dad being like, yeah, that's not necessary. Let's just let our actions speak for ourselves. You
right.
know? Like,
it's so different than like every other child parent relationship in Harry Potter, though.
You know,
where like
is
everyone
true.
Is like an exact mirror parrot of their parents.
Yes. I mean, yeah, because I mean, you're going to have Dudley, you're going to have Draco, even like Seamus in Order of the Phoenix is going to
be.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking last week about like all the Weasley kids kind of being like a little bit more Arthur or a little bit more Molly.
Yep, absolutely.
Everyone's always like, Harry, you're just like James.
Right, yep. Right. And Harry does sort of have that like penchant for breaking rules, and mm-hmm. so did James. So yeah, that's a really good point that Cedric is able to overcome it because he's just so good.
Cedric Moldbreaker Diggory, as it were.
As it were, that's what they call him.
Okay, but so I was doing some math here because Amos is going to say, or he asks him, how long of a walk did they have? And he says, oh, we live just on the other side of the village there. You? And he says, we had to get up at 2, didn't we, said, at 2 in the morning. My goodness. Okay, so let's math. At the end of the chapter, we're going to find out that they arrive, that their portkey leaves at 5 past 7, 7:05 a.m.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, so, and they arrive there, and when they get to the top of the hill, when Hermione pants her way to the top of the hill, they have 10 minutes before it goes. Sorry. It's just such a stupid sentence.
Really? We're not making fun of Hermione.
I'm not making fun of Hermione.
We're making fun of the inclusion.
I know. Yeah, yeah. It just does not need to be there. It is so pointless. That means they arrive at the top of the hill at 6:55, right? The Diggorys are already there.
Yep.
I don't know how long we can assume the Diggorys have been there, but let's give them the benefit of the doubt and say they've been there for a while, since like 6 in the morning, right?
Sure.
Like that would have mean they've been there for like 55 minutes by the time the Weasleys show up.
Sure.
That means they had a 4-hour walk at minimum.
Starting at
2 in the morning. And Amos and Cedric have been hiking.
Yes. I mean, and Harry was frozen from their like 30-minute walk.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, this is, I mean, Cedric must have some chapped face cheeks.
I know. What was also hilarious is that Amos is going to sit here and brag on what a great flyer Cedric is. And I'm like, dude, if you have a 4-hour walk, hop on some broomsticks, man.
Truly. Especially like, in the middle of the night.
That's assuming they've been there for 55 minutes. They could have been also walking for more. They could have been there for just 10 minutes. You know, this could have been a 4.5-hour hike.
And let's see. I mean, so what is average walking speed? Like 20 minutes a mile, maybe? So,
yeah, I mean, not up hills and through the woods.
I mean, yeah. So, I mean, I'm just saying, though, like we could be looking at somewhere between like 8 and 12 miles that they traveled to.
Yes.
Be there.
Yeah. 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 Right. My goodness.
The man's an athlete.
We know Cedric is.
we know that. Yeah. Yeah.
My goodness. What a walk, though.
Right. So then he's like, still not complaining. Quidditch World Cup. Wouldn't miss it for a sack full of galleons. Which I also think is kind of like an interesting little piece there, because that actually ends up being the prize money is a sack full of galleons.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's literally handed to Harry in a sack.
In a sack. I know. Yeah. Like, I can't imagine it cost them 1,000 galleons, though, to get these tickets.
Let's hope not.
I mean, goodness, then it's all the... anyway.
All the Weasleys are there. It's like,
all the Weasleys are there. I know. Is he looking around like, wow, could you spend 7,000 galleons on this, Arthur?
Well, I mean, that's basically what he says next.
Yeah.
And the tickets cost about that, mind you. Looks like I got off easy. Amos Diggory peered good-naturedly around at the three Weasley boys, Harry, Hermione, and Ginny. All these yours, Arthur.
Yeah, and he says, oh, no, only the redheads and the hand-me-downs. He doesn't say hand-me-downs, just the redheads.
Red hair.
Red hair. Only the ones with red hair and the hand-me-down robes.
Oh, man. Yeah. Only if Draco was the
Only if Draco was there, yeah.
This is Hermione, friend of Ron's. I like that Arthur introduces Hermione first.
Yep.
And Harry, another friend.
Another friend. Just very low-key.
Do you think that is Arthur, like, trying to protect?
I do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I agree with you, to which Amos does not pick up on at all in response, Merlin's beard. Harry Potter?
Yeah, said Harry.
Sed's talked about you, of course, said Amos Diggory, which honestly is kind of sweet, like, to, especially when you know everything Cedric says is, like, kind and thoughtful
and polite.
It's like, there's no way in the world Cedric came home and was like, guess who I beat at Quidditch.
Oh, I know. Absolutely not. And then, God, this next sentence is kind of heartbreaking. He says, Sed, that'll be something to tell your grandchildren that well. Just like, oh...
I know. Oh, if sad. Only. I underlined it too. It was just like, oh no.
Oh, that hurts.
It's like, and that's the type of thing when you're reading it for the first time, you would never know. Like, you would never think. Surely Cedric will have grandchildren.
Yeah.
Strapping young lad
over there. Just walked 8 miles in the dark.
Right.
Yeah.
And I even think, like, this particular line, like, I don't think it's like the best form for Amos, but it's like, it's, I think it's still sort of like backhandedly complimentary, attempting to give him some credit here. Like basically what he's just trying to say here is like, that's a big deal. Like, you know, you'll like, Harry, you're so famous that like one day my son will be able to tell his grandkids that he beat you at Quidditch. Like that, I mean, it's a strange way of complimenting somebody.
And I hate the absolute like, amnesia everyone seems to have about this situation, wherein it's like, oh yeah, Cedric beat Harry, and it's like no one addresses the fact that there was like dementors there,
right?
Like, no one will bring it up. It's like, excuse me, like even Cedric, and he's like Harry fell off his broom, Dad, I told you it was an accident. I'm like, I crossed that out, and I was like, Harry was attacked by dementors, Dad.
Yes.
Yeah, like why aren't we bringing that up? Like, why, everyone's just like, yeah, right? Remember that? Harry fell off his broom and you didn't. It's like, dementors. Guys, the dementors.
It's like, have any of you spent time around dementors?
Yes, there's like 100 of them or something.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
It was a big deal.
Yeah,
and he's like, yeah, but you didn't fall off.
It's like, my boy can handle the mentors.
That's right.
But he does then go on to, it's actually kind of hilarious because he's bragging about Cedric for always being modest, which is sort of like,
yeah, the opposite of modesty.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Which, to be fair, Amos is not incorrect. Cedric is always modest and is always the gentleman. But then he follows it up with, but the best man won.
I know.
It's like, all right.
Yeah. I'm sure Harry'd say the same, wouldn't you? Like, excuse me? I highlighted, I was like, I doubt it.
Yeah.
Also, not for nothing, but Harry, well, I mean, I guess they tie for the tournament. So, you know, even. We'll assume they would have caught the snitch at the same time. Each would have gotten a wing.
A wing, yeah.
Shroom, a tie.
Like a wishbone.
Yeah, exactly.
See who the ball goes with.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It seems awful to imagine ripping apart a snitch.
It really does, yeah.
Forget I said that. Can we omit that from the... No, okay, it's still in there.
There it is. Leave it in.
Whatever. Okay.
Yeah, but fortunately... Mr. Weasley like saves Harry here. He says, must be nearly time. It just sort of seems like, let's change the subject. This is getting bad. And then this is where we learn that the Lovegoods have already been there for a week because clearly by his own reasoning, they must have bad tickets.
Apparently.
Yep.
Yep.
The Fawcetts couldn't get tickets, even though 100,000 wizards will be there. Fawcetts don't get them.
I know.
Too bad.
Pretty wild.
I know.
Yep.
There aren't any more of us in this area, are there? It's like, what, you really don't know? I don't know.
I mean, I guess it could be like a light clarification. I mean, it sounds like they've pretty much covered the bases. There's about three families who live nearby and then 4 hours away at the Diggories.
No, right?
But then finally, at long last, we get the line, 9 people, 2 of them grown men, clutching this manky old boot.
Manky
in the semi-darkness.
Old boot, indeed.
I literally highlighted it, underlined it, and then wrote, there it is. Phew.
Woo.
Close Phew. Call.
Man.
Phew.
There it is. The manky old boot in the semi-darkness. And then it happens. Mr. Weasley counts it down, and boom, it happened immediately. Harry felt as though a hook just behind his navel had been suddenly jerked irresistibly forward, which to me sounds pretty painful.
It does.
Yeah.
I always kind of imagine like a fishing hook being like, you know, sort of like ripping you through like a wormhole.
Yeah, exactly. Just like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if you go like all inside out, flappy dory.
Oh, man, I hope not.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
excuse me.
Let's see here.
And then I love this. I do love this scene in the movie where they all just sort of like crash into the ground. And then Arthur and Amos and Cedric just sort of like Mary Poppins their way down.
Well, that's so odd. I mean, you're right. But I love it in the sense that it is so goofy.
Yeah.
The way that they like film that. Because yeah. I did write the words positively hate how this is depicted in the film.
Oh, never mind. Like I said, it's so cheesy.
It's so cheesy. Yeah, they do their like kind of goofy like whatever.
Yeah.
And
the book is a little more subtle. It's just Harry looked up. Mr. Weasley, Mr. Diggory, and Cedric were still standing, though, looking very windswept. Everyone else was on the ground.
And then get this. 7 past 5, Stoatshead Hill, said a voice.
Yeah, wow.
I know.
Boy.
Cliffhanger much?
I know.
Like, Jay, whose voice could it be?
Whose voice could that be? Just some dude, I guess. Muggle. Right? No, it's not. It's a
Basil?
Basil.
Yeah. I had to look for the next
Morning,
page.
Morning, Basil. Yeah. Basil, who's always getting in trouble over at the fishery. Bothering
wow.
Master Kelvin.
Did you just switch gears to name of the wind?
I did.
I was like, wait a second. I know Basil. He was always getting in trouble at the fishery. But no, that not much of a cliffhanger, but I do think it's funny because Harry Potter trappers do occasionally have spectacular cliffhangers. And the fact that like it leaves you with that mysterious said a voice, it's like it almost feels like it's such a weird place to like end the chapter, I guess.
I know, right?
Because, I mean, again, it goes back to like the Hermione line. It's just like, 7 past 5 from Stoatshead Hill, said a voice. Harry disentangled himself from Ron and got to his feet. Like, if I had just read those, you wouldn't necessarily think that I was describing one chapter to the next.
Right, yeah. It just sort of sounds like it just flows, seamlessly into itself.
Right. It's like, we just have to put a break somewhere, and why not there?
Right,
changed locations.
Yeah, we've changed locations. Boom, we're off the hill. We're at the Quidditch World Cup. Hooray!
Yes. So did we do it? Yes, we did, in fact. We cleared 1 hour talking about Harry and company walking up a hill to an old boot.
We sure did, Ben.
Boom, bam. Chapter 6 done.
Chapter 6 is done. We did it.
Who knew? Do we have a review?
We do have a review, Ben. Allow me. Let's see if this one... Every time I zoom in on these things... They stopped letting me copy and paste the text.
You should just screenshot them.
I do.
Oh.
But now I have to zoom in because the text is so small.
Oh.
Yeah.
I see.
That's what happens. All right. This is from Elikenton.
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 Hi.
Elikenton. I don't know. There we go. That's who it's from. It says, "Hey, brother, this is my favorite weekly podcast. I look forward to this podcast every week. I've gone back to listen to the books twice since starting this podcast so I can do a better job at keeping up. You guys are doing such a great job with all of your work. My question is, do you think Barty Crouch Jr. could have lied about seeing through the cloak? The real Moody never mentions that he can see through it, and I find it hard to believe that the eye is the only thing that can see through it. I was thinking he can see the rack spurts around Harry's head when he's invisible, since they would be outside of the cloak. Luna says he has a lot of them, so it could be an easy identifier for him. Thanks for making your content. I look forward to everything you make." Okay. I know. I read this, and part of me was like, well, the rack spurts, are they even real? They are real.
They are real. Okay.
Rack spurts are a real thing. If you remember the Harry Potter Go.
Wizards Unite.
Wizards Unite, the app. The rack spurts were something you actually had to, like, collect.
You could encounter.
They were part of the Calamity or whatever. So they're, like, a real thing, even though, obviously, Luna is the one who tells you about them. And you're kind of like, well, you know, they're, like, invisible things that float in through your head and make your brain go fuzzy,
Fuzzy.
Yeah.
In the films, Luna finds Harry under the invisibility cloak with the rack spurts.
Oh.
But in the book, Tonks.
In the book, it is Tonks.
Him. Yeah.
Yeah. She's just like, oh, saw the shades were down in one of the carts and thought that was weird. And maybe I should check it out because I didn't see it get off the train.
Yes. Yeah. And she just ends up, you know, riding that hunch and being correct.
Being totally correct.
Although it is kind of an interesting one. To sort of imagine, like, is there a possibility that that's what's going on? Because we have long talked about this particular issue. Like, when Harry gets the invisibility cloak, we understand it to be important. And the way that he even describes it in Christmas of Chapter 1, it sounds amazing. Like the feeling of the cloak, it's almost like water made solid.
Yeah.
Like it does seem like there is something notable or sensational about it. But then like Ron sort of describes it as like, I know what that is. That's an invisibility cloak. They're really rare. And it's like, Ron, you have no idea. Like, this is one of one.
Right.
You know, it is like lived for a millennium.
Yeah.
Probably.
It's,
you know,
like, not just a invisibility cloak, it's the invisibility cloak.
Yes, yeah. The defining one. So the big thing there though is like when Moody can see through it, it's applying so much power to Moody's eye.
Yeah.
Like to the point where it's like, you know, we know Moody is one of the best dark wizard catchers that there is. You know, he's one of the best Aurors who's ever lived. He put tons of Death Eaters in Azkaban prison, basically committed his life to this particular thing. But it's still like, man, if his eye can see through it, it's like, that means that there are artifacts out there that are at least on caliber with the Hallows.
Yeah.
Which need explanation.
Yeah.
So it's a big question. Like, I know that we've gone down this rabbit hole before, because when we got, you know, the, Fantastic Beasts saga, we also discovered that Grindelwald has very similarly like a bright blue eye. And we would know that like Mad-Eye has been accompanying Dumbledore going all the way back to the trials that we see inside of Goblet of Fire, inside of the Pensieve, before his eye has been swapped out.
Yeah.
Which means that, like, because I think he's just got two brown eyes or two black eyes, maybe.
Yeah.
In the memory. So whatever blue eye he eventually finds is something that is meant to, like, accentuate his work. So it's like, you have to imagine it's almost like an artifact that replaces, like, an eye that was taken from combat.
I was imagining he, like, lost an eye and then they replaced it with this one.
Yes. Yeah. And then even, I think, the way that Harry will eventually bury the eye under, like, a gnarled oak tree. Is very, like, Yggdrasil, like, going back to, like, Norse mythology and, like, you know, Odin's all-seeing eye and all that type of stuff. So it's, like, it's not that there's nowhere that we can pull mythos from that would suggest that this could be an eye of that caliber.
I know. The argument you could definitely make is that, like, why can, how could it be that this eye could see through one of the Deathly Hallows? Like, it feels so unlikely.
Yeah.
And yet, you're right. Like, we know that Moody and Dumbledore had like a long-standing relationship, that they were like buddy-buddy at these trials, that Moody was in the Order of the Phoenix, that he was the best Auror the Ministry ever had. So, like, clearly he would have been one of Dumbledore's, like, best men.
Yes.
Like, at his disposal. And so if he lost an eye in the line of duty and Dumbledore crafted him this eye, then the eye would have literally been made out of the Elder Wand, which would be another Deathly Hallow, in which case maybe you'd think, wow, maybe I can. Maybe that could see through it.
Extraordinary magic was used to create an extraordinary item.
Yes.
Yeah.
Extraordinary.
And I mean, yes, that stands the reason. Like, we see Voldemort, you know, when he's on proud display doing some pretty unbelievable magic, and that's not even as the master of the Elder Wand.
Yeah.
And then Dumbledore does truly tame it.
Yeah.
Himself. So I mean, I guess you could make that argument that, like, maybe the only way to forge such an object would be with one of those objects.
Yeah. Yeah. I think maybe even we even said, like, in an earlier episode that, like, is it possible that Master of One Deathly Hallow could see through the other? Like, is there a way Dumbledore can see through the cloak? Because it seems like Dumbledore can see through the cloak sometimes.
You're right. I mean, he's also got the piercing blue eyes, you know,
like
Dumbledore himself does, which is, you know, that's, I mean, because then you go back to Chamber of Secrets and there's the scene like where Harry and Ron are underneath the cloak when the Ministry comes to collect Hagrid to go to Azkaban because of the attacks up at the castle.
Yeah.
And Dumbledore sort of makes the announcement, like, you know, help will always be given to those who ask for it.
Yeah.
And like his eyes do flick to the corner where they are. And it's like, I mean, you just don't know with Dumbledore, because it does seem like he's got this like sixth sense for like being able to detect magic, similar to like when he enters the cave to find the Horcrux, like ancient magic always has a trace, and you know, arguably the cloak is of ancient magic.
Yeah.
So there's that.
There is stuff like that. But so going back to this particular comment, like, could it just be, I kind of like this, I think it is a funny one. And then I went back and double checked some of the stuff.
Oh, lay it on me. Okay. I'm sorry. I feel like I talked for too long.
Oh, no, you're good. So like, at first I was like, no, rack spirits feel like a Luna thing. Are those real? I looked that up. Like there were at least something you could find, like actually find in like Wizards Unite. So like, that seems like they're not just a Luna thing. They're a real creature.
Okay.
In case you're wondering, that's also what the Spectre specs that Luna's wearing are supposed to like be letting her see.
Is the
Rackspurt specifically.
Yeah. Which come for free in a copy of the Quibbler, right?
Yes, indeed. And I don't know if they work at helping you see Rackspurts or not, but Rackspurts are otherwise invisible creatures that float around your head and give you like a fuzzy feeling in your brain or something like that.
Okay.
But Luna apparently tells Harry that he's got a bunch of them.
Okay.
Like when she's sitting in the train car with him. So the two occasions in which maybe Moody is seeing through the cloak is one at the Three Broomsticks and two when Harry's foot is trapped in the like trick staircase.
That's
in
the one I usually go to. Yeah. Just because, I mean, I guess you could use context clues to be like, who's it going to be? There's an egg. It has to be Cedric or Harry because the Fleur and Crumb are both in their respective lodging.
Right.
So it's like, it's Harry.
Yeah. But so if like Harry is known to have Rackspurts and Luna is, if we can accept that Luna is correct, that he has got like Rackspurts floating around his head or whatever.
Yeah.
Then even when Harry is, and then that the eye can see them, because I could buy that.
I could easily
buy that.
They
could just see invisible creatures.
100%.
Like, that's less magical than the cloak itself. Then even just, like, sitting in class, the eye would notice them.
True.
You know, so, like, then the first time he would encounter Harry without knowledge that he has an invisibility cloak would be when he goes to the Three Broomsticks, because Harry has gone there with Hermione, but he doesn't want to attract attention to himself. And this is when him and Ron aren't talking. So he's like, fine, I'll go with you, but I'm wearing the invisibility cloak. And Hermione's all like, fine, but I'd hate it when you wear that thing. I never know if I'm talking to you or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Hermione looks like she's just sitting at the Three Broomsticks looking at like SPEW stuff. And Harry is sitting at the table with her, and Moody and Hagrid walk in, and Moody looks over and notices Harry under the cloak, and they walk over and he's like, nice cloak, Potter. But bear in mind that it's actually Barty Crouch Jr. And we know that Barty Crouch Jr. was using an invisibility cloak himself at the Quidditch World Cup.
True.
Right? So it's not like unfamiliar with them out in the wild or anything. And if he has seen Harry in class already and is familiar with the Rackspurts, he could see that Hermione is sitting there and that clearly there is someone next to her.
Yes.
That Rackspurts are floating around, even if he can't see them.
Okay, yeah.
Because
he
can see the Rackspurts.
Right.
And he can just context it out that Hermione is there with Harry, because duh, it's Harry, because they're friends. He's very perceptive. So he can just walk over and just wing it and basically just assume those are the same Rackspurts I see in class. Harry is right there. He's under an invisibility cloak.
It's more like a hint signature or something you would like be able to know to identify
right.
with this particular person. That's
exactly.
Interesting. That's really interesting. Yeah.
And then so it'd be a very similar situation. And then he could just tell Harry he could see on the invisibility cloak. I mean, it's not like outside of his ability to lie or anything. He's super good at it.
He's super good at it. Yeah. He's also incredibly smart.
Oh, he's incredibly smart. None of this seems like things Barty Crouch would have to like not be able to come up with on the fly.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And then the other situation is indeed in the trick staircase where Snape has found the egg and Harry has dropped the map. Snape's out of bed because someone was breaking into his office, which was actually Barty Crouch Jr.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Which Harry had seen on the map,
which is, and then Moody comes around the corner and he's prowling the school, obviously, because he was just breaking into the office.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
And he stumbles upon the scene. And in Harry's mind, he's like, Moody's the only one who can see everything. And Snape goes to grab the map. And it says Harry like waves his hands around as if to like get his attention to be like, it's mine.
Right.
It does not say Harry that like Moody like catches his eye or something and then like catches on. like Harry makes the motion and then Moody summons the map out of Snape's reach. But there is not like a Harry waved his eyes, Moody looked at him and made eye contact and then quickly summoned the map. It's like there's no reference point that he actually sees him waving his hands.
And for reference, the chapter we just read felt the need to let us know that Hermione was the last one up the hill for
exactly,
no reason.
Exactly.
So you're right. You're right.
So, like, but again, same exact situation. If Moody walks around the corner and just sees on the stairs the Rackspurts floating around nothing,
yeah,
then he'd be like, well, I know what the hell's happening. Sorry, I just swore. Gosh, I'm having a bad day on podcast doing this.
I know. It's the second time today.
I'm so sorry.
We'll bleep it out.
So it's not outside of the realm of possibility that the eye cannot see through the cloak.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And that
with
this
you.
Is the answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing is that, like, would Harry constantly be described as having, like, fuzzy thoughts or something?
Well, I mean, you know, Harry always has reason to have, like, in my mind, Rackspurts are almost like the physical embodiment of, like, anxiety or preoccupation. Like someone who stares off into the distance and is like, you know, just deep lost in thought or whatever, I imagine like would have lots of like Rackspurts.
Yeah.
Like I feel like I would have lots of Rackspurts.
Sure. Yeah.
And I mean, Harry at almost all times has lots of reason to have a lot of stuff floating around his head that isn't just living in the moment.
Like, yeah.
I mean, we talked about that earlier in chapter one, you know, where Harry looks at like his, I think it said like even Quidditch couldn't distract him now when he'd like just woken up from his dream. And it's like my commentary on that. I mean, I know I've hit on it a couple times now, but like, it just goes to show again, like what Voldemort has taken from him is his inability to just like live a regular life.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, he doesn't like even this 14-year-old boy just can't like look forward to sports,
right?
Because he has to think about like saving the world.
Yeah.
And so I could see Rackspurts being real. I could see Harry always having them, and I could see it being something that Moody's eye could pick up on, because it also feels like the kind of thing as a dark wizard catcher, like somebody who is not supposed to be somewhere probably has a lot of Rackspurts. Like it would probably make lots of people, like if you were in a bank and someone had them,
yeah,
that probably looks pretty suspicious.
Sure.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And that might be very helpful.
Right.
In being like there's 30 people here. One of them, I'm looking for someone who's not supposed to be here. And one of them has got a cloud of Rackspurts around their head.
Right. Yeah.
So
That guy.
The main reason I like this idea is because I don't like the fact that the eye can see through the cloak.
No, I agree. I agree. Yeah.
So it's like, this is the best explanation I've heard that gives us an out.
Yeah, I agree. That's why I like this explanation.
Yes.
Yeah. So good review. Great catch. I feel like this is like a super Carlin Brothers video coming to you soon.
Moody's eye can't see through the cloak.
What? Yeah.
Find out more here.
Exactly. Something like that.
Something like that. Yeah. Yeah. That's fun. That's really fun. Well, thank you so much. As always, in the future, guys, don't forget to leave reviews for us and ask us questions so that we can answer them here at the end of every episode.
Yeah. Thank you so much. But otherwise, make sure you join us next week for Chapter 7, Bagman and Crouch, here on Through the Gryffindor.
Today's episode was edited by Ethan Edgehill. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Super Carlin Brothers is sponsored by Nude. Y'all, of course, know about my podcasting and YouTube endeavors, and you may even know that I do some aquarium maintenance at times, but you may not be aware that my wife, Alice, and I also own a business together called Nude. I know it's a funny name, but there's actually a fun story behind it. See, Alice has always had a deep love for clothing and fashion, but even more so for thrifting. It was her way to sustainably and economically expand her wardrobe while still aiming for quality brands that would last.
fast, and she is really good at it. Like, I can't tell you the number of times over the years that she has been stopped by people admiring her finds. So much so that she coined a phrase for her response. Thanks, it's nude. As in new, but in the past tense, because it's not exactly new, it's nude. So, we took this concept and created a storefront not 100 yards from where Super Carlin Brothers was created, and have an online shop featuring pre-loved clothing from brands like Lululemon, Free People, Anthropologie, Madewell, and so many more. If you'd like to check it out for yourself to ring in the nude year, if you will, you can do so at nudesalem.com and use promo code SUPER to get 20% off your entire order. That's NEWDSalem.com, promo code SUPER for 20% off.